Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 8th, 2011 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. This is a work session for the Board of Aldermen, which means that we don't normally receive comment from the general public, and we have fewer items and a more conversational atmosphere on the board about the items that are before us. Mr. Manager, it's been suggested that perhaps we should move agenda item 3 up to the beginning of the agenda, the discussion of West Main Street lane configuration, since there seem to be a lot of people here who are interested in that item. Do you see a problem doing that? Is the board receptive to doing
great
that?
Great idea.
That makes sense.
Okay. Well, in that case, Mr. Manager, if you would have your staff present on item 3.
Okay. This is a discussion of the West Main Street lane configuration relating to conditions for motor vehicles, pedestrians, and bicyclists. And I think our presenters tonight are Seth Lajeunesse, a TAB member. I hope I didn't murder that last name. And a name that I'm very familiar with, Dale McKeel. So you all want to come on up. Jeff, I don't know if you need to set up anything for them. Well, I had a little phonetic help.
Oh, did you?
Yes. just to be perfectly honest.
Okay. Hi, my name is Seth Lajeunesse. I am a member of the TAB. I also am a research associate at the Highway Safety Research Center, part of UNC. We've been talking about this for a little while, probably since last spring. And it just seems really appropriate for this stretch. So just going to give a very short presentation on why, what a road diet is, if it's what this is technically called, and why it would be appropriate for West Main Street. How do we do that? And the date on this was originally set for January 11th, but inclement weather kind of prevented us from having this discussion. So basically, it'll just cover two things: what exactly a road diet is. It's probably a hot topic at cocktail parties is one thing, but the other is essentially a lane reconfiguration. It's pretty straightforward, as we'll see in a minute. And also, there are a number of benefits that we foresee for the stretch along West Main Street, and that's from West Weaver to Hillsboro, where that stretch actually right in front of this building. So we'll go over some of the reasons it's appropriate, including safety benefits, aesthetics, street continuity, mobility and accessibility improvements, and also that it really does, it's consistent with one of the recommendations in the adopted transportation plan, Carborough Bike Transportation Plan. So just conceptually, it's a redivvying of space along the roadway. It goes from four lanes, what it is currently, to three lanes. Essentially, there's two travel lanes, and then in the middle there is a center turn lane, and we'll see pictures of these just to give a visual of that. ADTs would be average daily traffic volumes. It usually supports up to about 20,000, and that's quite a few. This street, this segment here, has a lot less than that. I quoted at 4,400, and I think it's probably more like 5,000, but it's well under what it's able to hold. It doesn't really affect capacity at all. But also, the reallocation allows for different uses of the road. The road right now seems to be kind of favors the peak period automobile traffic. This kind of also allows for biking and walking comfort. So in essence, this is what it is, a classic road diet, as this is called, four to three lanes. You see on the left is four, and you go to three lanes here, and one lane's width is divided up into two bike lanes there. And as I had said before, I quoted at this, but it's probably more like 5,000 ADT or traffic volume per day. So that's quite low. And so this really shouldn't affect capacity at all, a road diet. The benefits, there's several researchers, actually colleagues of mine at where I work, have done extensive studies on road diets, and they call it a crash reduction factor, so it's the percent reduction in crashes you'd expect from doing the treatment, and in general you find about 29% reduction. And the reason for this, are we'll go over that in a little more detail, but in essence, it slows speeds down, and it reduces certain types of crashes that we'll see in a moment. So the types of crashes, there are three of them. You see the schematic on the left is the original, and then the right is the road diet. You see these cars here. This car on the left, the red one, is about to make a left-hand turn. And it's a rear ender. It's the first type of crash that it helps reduce, because you shift the traffic to just one lane and you have a dedicated turning lane when you have a road diet. Another one, if this person wasn't about to hit the guy in front of him, he would probably try to take a right, and it's called a side swipe. It's another type of crash that's reduced with this configuration. And lastly, this one's probably the most severe crashes typically happen from this last one, and it's called broadside. You can see how this happens is that the view of the car in the farthest travel lane, a lot of times the view is obstructed sometimes, particularly if that red vehicle traveling north here is a larger vehicle, like a truck. You wouldn't be able to see the other car coming. And say that person also yields to that person and says, you can turn. Well, this person wouldn't necessarily do the same, so reduces that. So those are the major kind of automobile safety benefits, but there are a number of other benefits to different road users, including bikers and walkers. What this allows, strategically thinking too, is that you have a buffer when you put bike lanes down between traffic and the pedestrians. So you could potentially move trees over closer, about 6 feet closer, or the width of a bike lane. Another thing that trees also do besides clean the air is reduce traffic noise. So basically general aesthetics are improved. This is something Charlie Heilman had whipped up. It's a very nice aerial shot. If you think about it just conceptually in terms of street continuity, you have bookends that are two lanes right now where it comes up to West Weaver, where it meets West Weaver, and then two lanes again once it splits into Hillsborough. This would essentially, if you look at the right, just continue that two-lane configuration. Whereas now it kind of balloons out into four. So it creates a continuity by reallocating the space and going for the road diet. One of the major things probably is mobility for just a number of different users. And there's a lot of transit users that use this link along here. In fact, right in front of this building, bus riders alight, get off the bus, and try to cross four lanes now. It makes it pretty difficult. So what this does is, again, reduces the conflicts that these transit users, and then they become pedestrians, have with automobile traffic. It also gives a buffer for the pedestrians. Number one indicator of comfort for pedestrians is a buffer from traffic. So a bike lane would provide just a little extra space and feel a little more comfortable for the pedestrian. So with that, this is from the Carrboro Comprehensive Bike Transportation Plan. This is a concept of it, and essentially that's, in essence, what it would look like. If you want to see some of the references here, further reading. Yes?
It's kind of a uninformed question. Okay. I'm good at asking uninformed questions. I've been in some of these situations before, and I think it's great, and I think it's definitely workable for us, but sometimes it seems like you can have people going different directions in that center lane. Like people kind of jump the gun a little bit. So there I noticed that there's one arrow that's turning in to Town Hall and another arrow that's turning in to Shortstop. No, that's not short stuff. Into the BP station. So somebody might get into the center lane too soon. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And that you can then have, like, some head-on issues. Has that been studied, or?
Yeah. Well, most bike or road diets include a center turn lane. That's essentially right. The design. There was this massive study. This one, let's see. Stout, right here, this one at the bottom, looked at a number of different road diets that were took place all across the state in Iowa. And they found that was one of the things that they were concerned about, that in general that wasn't really so much of a concern. And again, it has a crash reduction factor of 29%. So they did before-after studies is, you know, how many crashes are occurring on these streets, how many afterwards, and they find that generally it does reduce.
Was there anything that looked specifically at crashes that occurred within the center lane?
Certainly, yeah. Those would probably involve the head-on crashes. And again, that as a in terms of probability, the probability of something like that happen is very low.
But people are going slower, so that could kind of...
In general,
people would be going slower, so because they'd be slowing down to turn, so they could stop quicker too when they saw that they were going to crash into something.
I would say that's a plausible reason for it.
But it is an issue that's been looked at. Right?
Yes, extensively. Yeah, most DOTs that their major concern is safety, and so they, you know, unless this has a good record of safety, they're not going to implement it.
Well, I don't have blind faith in the DOT, but I do trust your office more than I trust DOT. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Seth, sure. One of the things I particularly like about this is how it makes it a lot easier for the pedestrians to cross.
Yes.
And my question is the crosswalks that you had on your after map, I assume those are just suggestive. Did you do analysis as to where those
are? Yeah, these crosswalks are just, it's conceptual.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we put those in is because DOT will not allow there to be crosswalks with going across a four-lane stretch without some kind of definition. So currently there are no crosswalks between 605 and Weaver Street. The reason is because they won't allow those.
For those of you listening at home, Charlie Heilman from the Transportation Advisory Board just said that DOT won't permit a crosswalk across a four-lane cross-section without a place for pedestrians to stand safely in the center. So one of the potential advantages of this change would be that it would only be a two-lane cross-section so that DOT might allow more crosswalks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things it does allow. If you see that center turn lane, I don't know if anyone's familiar with Martin Luther King Boulevard, the pedestrian refuge islands that have gone in place. Something similar to that could go in an area where there wouldn't be turning conflicts on the center turn lane for pedestrians, so they don't have to cross one travel lane and then have a refuge and then cross another. But as it stands now, Charlie actually has a great video that I'm sure has circulated throughout town, is that particularly if you have children or someone that's not exactly able-bodied, they have to wait for a gap in traffic. And when you have four lanes, a lot of times that could be substantial time. I think one person he documented waited about 2.5 minutes or something. So quite a while.
I have a comment. I think this road diet idea is great. The map that you show, it looks like the southern part of it kind of ends right just around where Town Hall is.
Here?
Yeah, but I'm always challenged.
Yeah.
Always challenged.
Be like right around here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always challenged, particularly in the summer when I'm walking to farmers market, and I'm trying to think through if this road diet, even though it ends right there, if that'll also really help there with pedestrian crossing, because that's a pretty long stretch. Not when you're going on the side where the little triangle is, but on the other side, it's. Seems like that'll narrow it just a little bit, even if it's just only a bike lane, but for a pedestrian.
Yeah, you're probably right. One of the things that we're recommending that accompany this is a before-after study to look at kind of the use right now by various road users and also some of the safety concerns, mm-hmm. how people are crossing, where are they crossing, what are the yielding rates from motorists to pedestrians. So that'd be really interesting to find. We would anticipate some benefit in terms of that.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I was late. Put me in timeout.
Go ahead, Joel.
How long has that road been four lanes?
You know what? We were just discussing that.
Okay. It's
it was before 1985, right?
Somewhere. But it hasn't always been four lanes.
Apparently it hasn't.
It hasn't.
Apparently there was, I don't know, some justification for widening it maybe 30-odd years ago.
Because there was all this growth going on up there and had to get it through to
Smith level.
Yeah, this is why. Because of all the growth, and it had to move quicker, so you needed four lanes to move it quicker.
Okay.
Yeah, worked real well, yeah.
That's a pretty traditional view.
It does work quicker, yeah.
Yeah, it does for certain road users, right?
Right. Okay. For cars.
For cars, yeah.
I'll go after
Sammy.
Well, for one, I'd like to thank everyone on the Transportation Advisory Board. I'm lucky enough to be a liaison to that board, and I'm always impressed with all the knowledge. So in response to Jackie's question, you're pointing out this massive study. It's kind of funny but typical of what I tend to hear a lot on the advisory board. We're so lucky to benefit from a lot of what the university produces. The one thing I was hoping we might be able to recommend, and I know this isn't something that was focused on in this presentation, but I've heard a lot of people talk about the cross issues with Poplar crossing Main Street, and if the DOT, when it does come to repave and hopefully restripe this road, that they may be able to look into making that a little more friendly for both bikers and walkers, because it's currently pretty tricky, and mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of people comment on that. So,
in what sense do you mean to walk across Poplar?
So you're talking about
east Poplar to
you're
west
talking
Poplar.
About right here?
So. Yeah, east to west Poplar.
Sorry, you're talking about right here.
Right there.
Yeah.
Because it's such an expanse. Yeah.
Right.
It really is.
That needs to be addressed too.
There are a number of treatments that could happen here. You're right. That would really benefit pedestrians in particular.
There's a number of issues of walkability that we did not try to address here. We wanted to just focus strictly on the timetable of repainting and making sure that you all were able to act before that actually
Do we know when the repainting might
That's the thing, we do not know right now. Jeff can probably add to that, but yeah, we don't know what the repaving schedule is. In essence, this would involve repainting what we're proposing. Of course, we could add a number of other treatments, but this would be the most cost-effective way to get immediate benefit, and it would be concurrent with a repaving. So it would just be a directive to DOT to do this kind of design.
Did Joel go?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I had two questions, but mm-hmm. I really like it. As somebody who is on my bike often enough, I see this as being a great plus for an area that gets really confusing very easily from Carborough School to Town Hall. And I applaud the TAB for your work on this. My two questions. One, did TAB folks talk with Chief Crabtree and the fire department to make sure? Is there any concern, Jeff?
Come up to the mic.
It was discussed at the staff level, traffic and parking committee, and there weren't any comments about it that would indicate concern. The Traffic and Parking Committee has the representatives from Fire Department, Police Department, Public Works, okay. and Planning, and Economic Development.
Okay. Good. And my second question is that, you know, Seth, when the TAB was looking at this, are there any other areas that you think need a diet?
Right off the top of my head, Jones Ferry Road would be a good candidate for that. I don't know, Jeff, if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, one point on that is DOT is looking at alternatives, possible improvements for the Davie and Jones Ferry intersection. We're still waiting to hear back on the results of that study. The other thing I'll point out that was mentioned earlier about when this might happen is DOT formulates the annual resurfacing plan based on, you know, condition of the road, but they are by state statute required to consider any information that a municipality submits to them in their decisions about what roads they will resurface. So if the result of this is a before and after analysis and a pavement marking plan that gets submitted to them, they're required to at least consider that.
Was Dale going to speak to us, or is he just here?
Indeed. Yeah, okay. Dale has some actual road diets to talk about in this area, in Durham. Let's see here.
Thanks, Pat.
Welcome back.
Yeah. You can't come home.
Can't stay away.
It's good to be here.
Good to see you.
I'm going to see if Kathy can, when you all used to ask me hard questions, Sarah used to sort of telepathically give me the answers. I'll see if Kathy's as good as she was.
You better. You can just channel Sarah.
I'll
you know.
Be the judge. Go ahead.
Since you're the telepathic one.
I'm going to channel Sarah.
You've done a good job.
All right. Well, it is good to be here tonight. And I've got a brief presentation. Just want to show you some examples of some road diets that we've done in Durham. And I'm not here. I'm here to share this information. I'm not here to take credit for all this work. We've had a lot of work from our traffic engineer and some of his staff on these projects, and they've really done a lot of good work to bring these projects to fruition, to work with the State Department of Transportation to get approval. We are pleased with the way these have turned out. I will say that the whole term road diet, some folks have started using sort of different term for that, because at least in some folks' eyes, probably not that many folks in Carrboro, but the idea of putting your roads on a diet seems to have negative connotations. Why would you reduce the number of lanes on a road? But as Seth has already pointed out, there are a lot of benefits. This is a map of Durham showing the some of the projects that we've done. This is Duke University Road, Elizabeth Street, portion of Irwin Road, Lake University Drive, and Chapel Hill Street. And I wanted to show this map in part to also point out that even though it looks like we've done sort of short segments all around the city, this is part of a larger plan. Most of these road diets were recommended in our bicycle transportation plan. And as roads are being repaved, we are trying to implement those recommendations. And so, for example, if you see Duke University Road here and Chapel Hill Street, well, there's a gap between the two, but that section should be repaved either this year or next year. And so we hope to close that gap and provide a complete bicycle network in that corridor linking the university with downtown Durham. This is the first road diet that was done in Durham. It's on Duke University Road. This is a city maintained street, and parts of this parts of the street were being repaved, and parts of the street were not. As you can see, it's a little over a mile, and you can actually see where some of the old pavement markings were, and those were milled up when the road was restriped. And this was one that, Duke University was actually a very a big proponent for, and it's worked out well. This is the second one that was done, and this is a portion of Irwin Road, a little bit sort of east of the hospital, closer to the 9th Street area, and this section also in this section Duke actually paid for the traffic engineering study to do this. They also looked at the section in front of the hospital, if you're familiar with that area. But the traffic volumes were a lot higher there, and so it really wasn't feasible to do the road dye. But we were able to do it on about a half-mile section. This is the third project, Elizabeth Street. This is over in East Durham, near the Golden Belt area, if you've been over there. And this is actually a road that was built, I think, as part of the urban renewal plans back in the '60s, and it was much wider than it needed to be. So again, when it was repaved, I think it was a five-lane road, and like I said, it's got about 5,000 vehicles per day. So the road diet was done on that road also. This is University Drive near downtown, and this was done just last year. And this is a relatively short section, but this is one that I mentioned will another portion of University Drive will be repaved this year, and we plan to extend the bike lanes on that.
Is this looking south? Am I seeing that?
It is looking, yes, southwest. Mm-hmm. Correct. So I think Duke Street is sort of right behind this where this photo was taken. And the fifth one is Chapel Hill Street, and this was a state maintained street, and this one was also done just this year. I will point out on this picture, you can see there are some overhead signs on the photo on the right, and also the traffic signal heads. Another consideration that sometimes comes up with these projects is that overhead signs or the traffic signal heads have to also be adjusted if your lane configuration is changing. So sometimes there are some other issues that might come up. There are also projects like this that have been done in other cities in North Carolina. This is East Boulevard in Charlotte, and this was, you know, the road looks really narrow. This road was four lanes just a few years ago. And you can see they also put in a crosswalk and a median refuge island on East Boulevard. And I think they probably put in three or four of these crossings at different locations. And this has really turned into a very, very much of a showcase project in Charlotte, and other neighborhoods in Charlotte have been requesting similar treatments in their neighborhoods.
Is that, Dale, is that a city street or is it DOT?
I believe this is a city street.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the traffic count is?
I do not. I'll try to find out. And they have done some extensive before and after studies on this on East Boulevard, and I'd be glad to share that information with you. And this is over in Raleigh, Peace Street. This is near the sort of the section between Cameron Village and Glenwood South area. And this, a few years ago, was also four-laned, and they restriped it as three lanes. They didn't put in the bike lanes on this section, but they do a road diet. And Raleigh has also done a pretty extensive safety analysis of this particular section. 20 want to talk a little bit about the process that we went through in Durham, particularly working with the state DOT. We prepared a restriping plan like this that was submitted to them. And then, you know, once the road was resurfaced, this was given to the contractors who did the new markings. And we also did a traffic analysis showing the level of service at the intersections before and after the road diet based on the both existing and projected traffic volumes. So this, you know, this information gave the Department of Transportation more comfort in approving these changes. This is just some of the lessons learned. The first bullet, the projects are counterintuitive. There's a cartoon I'll show you from Charlotte where, you know, person's on the phone with the mayor, traffic engineer's on the phone with the mayor, and he's saying, you know, I'm going to reduce the road from four lanes to two lanes, and that's going to be a good thing. Well, you know, that doesn't really make sense but to a lot of folks, but as you've already heard, there are benefits. The final point, the final bullet, just what I mentioned before, it's very important, you know, once the road diet is done, just to monitor the traffic on the ground and be ready to make adjustments as needed, with particularly the Chapel Hill Street example that I showed you from this summer in Durham. The first week or so after that was restriped, there were some issues there, and the traffic engineers had made some adjustments to the signal timing at the intersections, and were able to really make it work so that everyone's happy with it now. And that's all. I'll show you this is the cartoon I mentioned before. Yeah. So if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer those.
Thanks, Kyle.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for coming over.
Thanks. Nice work, Kathy.
I'll move the resolution with alternative 2B, which is that we would pursue this to the next step.
I'll second.
Yeah.
All right. So that just so that people at home, I know y'all on the Transportation Advisory Board know this already, but just so people who are listening at home understand that West Main Street is a state-maintained highway. It's technically Business Highway 54 through downtown, and so making these kinds of changes is in the control, ultimately, of the North Carolina Department of Transportation. So we're going to have to pursue these issues with DOT, and it's not simply a matter of deciding that this is a good idea and we're just going to go out with our trucks tomorrow and start repainting the lanes on it. So anyway, so this could take a while, but hopefully we'll get somewhere. Seems like a great plan to me. All right. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much, y'all.
And also, I just want to acknowledge Charlie's not going to be with the Transportation Board, neither is Austin. So thank y'all very much for all the excellent work. And this is a great reminder.
Right.
Bummer. Yeah.
Speaking of which, the next item on our agenda is a discussion of advisory board appointments.
Who should take their seats?
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
You are coming to the birthday party, right? To the anniversary party? Okay.
Yes, Carborough's centennial is coming up on March
3rd.
Thursday, March 3rd.
Yes.
We are inviting former aldermen, former mayors, former residents.
That was such
Carborough,
a great idea. Tell
everybody.
Kathy.
In the invitation to the former board members, tell them we want to take everybody's picture.
That would be so cool.
So then that we can have it in town.
Because there are four mayors still around.
Yeah. And alive.
And alive. I haven't killed any of them.
When you say you want to take your pictures, 7:30 event is what you're looking for?
Yeah, so let me clarify that on March 3rd, there's actually two sequential events. One is an appreciation for our volunteers in Rec and Parks and our advisory board members that is going to be an event from 6:30 to 7:30. And then starting at 7:30 is our centennial celebration. This is going to be at Century Center, and we want
everybody
who's possibly interested to please come. There's going to be a lot of fun. Jackie, actually, do you want to describe it all?
And in the first part will also be, former board members, former mayors, former staff members, our peers across the county, although we are peerless. So I don't know if they would like being called our peers. It'll be open to hopefully some university folks. That's the first part, which will be heavy hors d'oeuvres. And then the second part will be open to the community, and we'll have school children doing kind of, it'll be like an assembly about Carrboro, and we'll also hopefully have some displays of pictures. The Arts Commission has the arts exhibit that week, that month, will be a woman who's done photography of the railroad, which should be interesting. So we're just pulling together a bunch of stuff. It'll run. We're going to have some banners coming up very soon throughout town on all the little banner posts that say Walk Carrboro. So it'll be a big day, but it's the kickoff, and then there'll be other things happening, and Carrboro Day, which will include a circus, because everybody thinks we're a circus. Anyhow, there'll be one of those really interesting European circuses all over the place. So, anyway, that was more than you asked, Mark, but we're getting there.
At the 7:30 event, because it'd be a nice historical.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So in the next 100 years, they can see our pictures.
Be cool. And it's not sugar-coated. It's not a rah-rah thing. Anyhow, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you, Jackie. Okay. So we are on discussion of advisory board appointments. We have quite a number of...
We have 12 appointments to make.
Yeah. So...
Should we just
which of these are easy?
They're all easy.
They're all
easy. Arts is easy. Yeah, because there aren't many applicants.
I guess what I meant to say is
these are not easy. First?
Can we do the arts?
No, let's do the arts.
Why don't we start at the top and just work
down? Just work down. I don't care.
Okay.
All
right.
Okay.
I'll move Shriv Navaratnam be appointed to the Board of Adjustment.
Second it.
Okay. It's been moved in. That's a reappointment, I believe. Is that right?
That's, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moved and seconded that we reappoint Shriv
Navaratnam.
Can we do more than one person at a time?
Shriv Navaratnam.
Yeah, the other applicant, that's his second choice. He's an applicant for planning.
Okay.
I'm assuming we do one board at a time.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
I think for the planning board, I'd like to suggest that we appoint Damon Seals, Michael Rogers, and John Killeen.
Second.
And that still leaves us a couple of openings.
Three.
But I'd like to make the suggestion to the board that we continue to solicit a few more applications to work on some more diversity on the board.
Round it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's been moved, and was there a second for Seals? Seconded for Seals, Rogers, and Killeen. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. And is it clear which seats we just appointed them to? Because there's a variety of...
That would be the 2011 seats.
Okay, so that's filling
those
three 2011
seats.
Everybody's in agreement, that's what we just did.
Yes.
Right.
Move Susan Poulton to the transition area seat.
It's been moved and seconded that we reappoint Susan Poulton. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Move Tom Weltberger to 5 seats on the
second.
Second. He's chair.
Was he recommended by Chairman Tom Weltberger?
He was.
And he seconded
How about
it.
That?
Incidentally.
Tom has, in fact, been doing a great job.
He's wonderful.
The person who,
he has.
One of the main moving forces behind our historic plaque program.
I wish that we could somehow get word out how important the role of the Appearance Commission is. And maybe what we should do, I was just thinking for all of these, but for the Appearance Commission, particularly at our centennial celebration, we could put in a plug. All of you who love the town so much, who love this and that about it, here are some ways that you can...
That's
help make
idea.
Sure it stays the town that
get involved
that you
or
love.
Get back involved.
Yeah.
All right. Moved and seconded for Tom Wilberger. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Transportation Advisory Board.
Yeah, I talked to Heidi, who's been there quite a while, and she's interested in one more year, and the board really wants her historic
perspective.
Yeah. Thanks. So I'd like to move Heidi for a one-year appointment, and Stalk and
it.
Curtis for full of three-year appointments.
I'll second that.
Second it. Oh, good.
You got a third it by now.
Third in it.
Well, before you do that,
yes.
Just a question. Why Stalk over Curtis?
Stalk and Curtis.
Oh, Stalk and Curtis.
Right.
Over Michelle.
Over Michelle. Fair reason why. Just ask.
All right. Fair question. Good answer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Okay.
Aye.
I didn't hear an answer.
Oh. It's both of them. It's both of them.
Okay, never mind.
The motion is for both of them.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Not really.
Recreation and Parks.
Move Garson and Bell.
Yes. Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Do we know what seats aye. They're going to be in? I'm just asking, because there are four seats with varying
I'm assuming we mean the 2011 seats, unless we're...
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that... Okay. And then there are also two other vacant seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to re-advertise.
So we need that at the centennial,
we need to
too.
Push it at the centennial.
Okay. Added to the list.
Yeah.
All right.
No one leaves the centennial until
we'll lock the doors. let's see. Recreation Parks out of town, 2 seats.
Move Jamie Watts.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes, ma'am.
The next one is the appointment to Recreation and Parks by. Like a representative from the schools, we really need them to do that, and oftentimes they don't. With all of the sharing of facilities and all of the issues, and we share clientele, I think we need to speak very strongly that we need that representative there. After all, it's
Is
that usually a staff person?
No.
It's a school board appoints somebody?
It can be a school board appoints somebody or a staff person, but it's been years since they did that.
I know when I was the liaison, we had someone for a little bit, Kevin Forrest. He was an administrator.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily have to be a Carrboro resident, or does it?
No.
School district.
Because there's so many, like when we were doing the soccer fields.
I mean, right, I know.
Always issues.
Helpful.
I think we need to ask more strongly that they...
Well, and Sammy and I just went to a joint meeting with the Intergovernmental Parks Work Group, and the discussion about the roles of the school and the schools, of all the people who were attended there, and there had been, like, I don't know, 35 folks there, no one from the school district, especially because one of the big topics is shared facilities and the need.
That's why they weren't there.
Right. So,
your boss is retiring, they're getting slack.
Should we contact the chair of the school board about that?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah.
Is it an appointment? Let me just get some clarification, though. Is it really an appointment that the school board has
it
made?
It started out, this is years ago, and the first time we tackled the shared facilities thing, asking the school board to, it didn't have to be a school board member.
Right.
But that somebody, you know, somebody who can speak with authority for the school system, whether high-level staff or a school board member.
It would be cool if it wasn't necessary. You could just appoint someone else to speak for the schools.
Well, but it needs to be somebody who, it needs to be somebody, yeah. Somebody who has authority.
Somebody who can actually deliver.
Well, the assistant superintendent for support services used to do that.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Okay, well, I tell you what.
As mayor.
We'll communicate with.
Thank you.
With the school board chair and/or perhaps whoever the new superintendent.
Sammy, if we can check that off.
Okay. Human Services Commission.
Move made in Birch.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Mayor passing unanimously. ESC?
I'll move Terry Turner for the residency and Brian Russell and Chris Stevenson for at-large seats.
I'll second that.
Let's have a discussion about
that. Are people going off of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of people.
That's okay.
We had one resignation, Chris DeFilippo, and Peter went off.
And Gary.
And Gary.
Gary's off.
Yeah, he may come back. He's busy right now.
That's a real loss.
It is.
New child. Yeah.
But Bob Saunders is.
He's on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not. He's not. That's a mistake.
Okay.
That his name
he's
is.
On.
Okay. Never mind. Because I was going to say he's wanted
no,
to.
No, he's on.
No, he's really.
He's still on. His name shouldn't be.
Yeah, his name is mistaken.
Yeah, he's in his first year of a three-year term.
Okay.
And never mind. Stevenson and Russell both are downtown business people.
Right. So okay. Brian, they're at large.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm just pointing out what I think Brian lives in Chapel Hill, but
he does.
Not his
fault. He's a downtown business person. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
he got as close as he could.
He got as close as he
Chris
could.
Chris lives in.
We'll annex him.
He'd probably be into
it. Why you still have the authority?
That'll be about a week.
They're one little house. All right.
That would be a voluntary one, probably.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So the motion was Stevenson, Russell, and who?
Turner.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, just for clarification, all the members of the Recreation Parks Commission are appointed by the board, and the ordinance says that one member shall be selected as a representative from the local school system. So it's pretty wide open. In other words, you'd sort of determine, I guess, what you mean by a representative of the local school system, but it's not appointed by them, it's appointed by you.
Oh, so we can just pick somebody?
Let's see. The implication of intent is that they somehow represent the school system.
Right. Wait a minute, so that means that we could potentially, contact one of the schools in Carrboro and ask one of the schools in Carrboro to have a rep?
Well, I think
you're appointing them. They're not appointing them, so, how you get your person is up to y'all.
Okay.
I mean, how you determine.
I really think would be best is if a name was put forward by the either the president or the next superintendent would really be what would be best.
You know, because then
that person would have to do it.
Right. I mean, if we don't get someone who's really high up in the chain that understands all of the agreements and documents and so on, if we can't get that, then we ought to try to get someone who has a real working knowledge of that. And that would be like the person who deals with facilities at a school, maybe the athletic director at one of the local high schools or the athletic director over the middle schools or someone who has to know how that works and or find out information about it.
So if you don't get like the superintendent for support services, I mean, for example, you know, the athletic director at Carver High or, you know, the athletic director at Morris Grove, where their facilities are new and they're going to connect with other things, I think would be really important.
Now, I think we want somebody higher up with a broader perspective because one of the issues we deal with is turfism. So
we'll shoot for that. Although, you know, we'll shoot for that, Jackie, absolutely.
Okay.
Although,
you
know, if the issue is people being territorial about their facilities, then there's also the possibility of at least having the opportunity to kind of confront that head on. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
All right,
okay.
EAB, did we already do that? No.
No.
We have four seats.
And four
up
people.
To four.
One second.
And four applicants.
Yeah, but Rob's, that's his second choice.
Has he been appointed to anything else?
No.
He
it says second choice, but he doesn't show up anywhere else.
He's looking for Greenway.
Well, we don't have
I know, but what I'm saying is that's his second choice, and all the other folks who wanted second choice, we were honoring it.
Okay.
Okay.
You haven't spoken to him, though.
I did.
He'd rather
do Greenway because he's a forester than, you
that
know,
makes sense.
And this is his second choice. Yeah.
That kind of makes sense.
Okay. Moves Didham, Butler, and Sinclair.
Second.
All right. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passing unanimously. That was Stidham, Butler, and Sinclair.
Right. And Dana and Nina are being re-upped. They're currently on.
Reappointment, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. NTAC, Carborough Representative, one seat. Jay Bryan is the Carborough Representative.
So moved.
All
second.
Right. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passes unanimously.
I said aye, in case you didn't hear me.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You don't have to say anything to vote aye. NTAC, Orange County Representative.
We just appointed her to the Planning Board. So.
Right.
I talked to her. She did not indicate any interest in doing that.
Okay.
I think there are some boards you can only be a member
say,
of one of them.
Basically, her position was, well, I go to a lot of the NTASC meetings anyway.
Okay.
That's good enough.
Okay.
Okay. So, and it says two seats needs to be approved by Orange County Commissioners. So what, we nominate people and they appoint? Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's nobody to nominate.
There's no applications.
And then the Arts.
And then the Arts.
Okay, Arts Commission. Are both of them recommended?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So moved.
So
second.
Move to appoint Russ and Korch. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Kind of passed unanimously.
Okay. That
rounds it out, does it not? Discussion of 2011 legislative agenda. Let us, before we begin discussing our legislative agenda, let me just point out that, and Joel, you correct me if I misstate this, because you have a closer to the pulse of Raleigh than I am, but I'll just point out that the Republican Party is in control of both houses of the legislature for the next 2 years and is clearly bent in direction more toward cutting the state budget than increasing the state's revenues.
And in fact, intend to cut the current fiscal budget by $400 million.
The ongoing fiscal year.
The ongoing.
Generally is not going to be a group of people who's very receptive to some of the kinds of issues that we've pursued in the past. So I just wanted to put
but
that.
They might support
as well shoot them
covenant up. Marriage, for example.
I suppose there are. I suppose they have plenty of plans. But I just wanted to kind of put that context around this discussion. Joel, Jack.
So I will once again delay legalization of pot for the legislative agenda. Although it would be a great way to raise taxes. However, That said, I'm really not totally kidding on that one. We had discussed medical marijuana the last time they were here.
That's something that this one besides taxes.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's one of our highest cash crops, no pun intended. And I think that other states are beginning to seriously look at it. From what I'm hearing, it's a Republican kind of thing that's coming through. There is the... Anyway, that dovetails on my main thing. There's been a lot of talk about the SBI and the scandals surrounding the SBI. And what came out were mainly like the big, horrible things. But my horrible year on the grand jury, what I saw over and over again was results from the SBI taking, and I'm sure everybody involved in the law knows this, I didn't. It can take 5 months to get a set of fingerprints back from the FBI, and it can take a year to get a rape kit back from the SBI.
SBI.
And meanwhile, there are either innocent people sitting in jail or there are bad people running around. It's very demoralizing for our police force. A large number of kind of the nuisance things did involve low-level drugs. And it's another reason to take a serious look at the failed war on drugs, is it's clogging up our legal system, it's clogging up the courts, it's clogging up the prisons. But even more, what's clogging things up is an ineffective SBI that we are paying for. I don't think that's a Republican-Democrat issue. I think it's a taxpayer and a law enforcement issue. So I would like to have a serious conversation with our legislative delegation about what's really happening to clear that up. There's just no excuse why our police should arrest somebody and it takes 5 months to get the fingerprints back, or even worse, a year to get a rape kit back. And, you know, as we as citizens are paying for those services, why is that happening? So I kind of feel passionately about that. I feel passionately about the legalization issue, too, for a whole host of reasons. But I'll wait for other Republican legislators to pass decriminalization before we... No, it'll happen. It'll come from the Republicans. It's not going to come from the Democrats.
It'll almost have to.
Yeah, but...
If it is going to happen, it would have to happen that way.
Well, what I'll tell you that joke later. So, I mean, that's just kind of an aside, and I don't mean it in a joking way. I think it's an issue that poll after poll after poll shows that the American people support. People are too chicken to bring it up. Carver is not too chicken to bring anything up. But more important than that, because that's kind of
Not going to happen this year.
It's a not going to happen this year, but I do think that the issues surrounding the SBI and how that affects law enforcement in our community should happen this year. It's not a partisan issue, so I would like that discussion.
Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we're remembering to talk about funding for the revolving loan fund. It's something we want to get
allocation of non-entitlement CDBG funds.
So the state wants a loan from us out of that? Is that we're going to review the state's application?
They don't qualify because they're not creating jobs.
Creating
I think Ellie wants to retire next year and open a law truck in downtown Carver.
She would, wouldn't she? It would only take bike and pedestrian clients.
She needs to stay out of B2. But yes, thank you for that reminder, Dan. Sammy?
This year, the improved or more efficient building code has been considered by our governor, and it sounds like the resolution they're arriving at is to have a commercial be 30% efficient and residential, the compromise is to have it 15% efficient, but they're willing to keep all the measures on the books so that when it comes up again, it might possibly be passed at its full 30% for residential. So I was hoping that we might be requesting being the guinea pig for that 30% extra on residential here in Carrboro.
Would that help us with the loan fund towards the energy efficiency programs that
or is this new construction?
It's new construction, yeah, and the retrofit ramp-ups.
All retrofit ramp-ups are for commercial, and Chapel Hills is for residential, but in the next cycle...
It's not new construction.
Right, but the next cycle...
No.
What I'm saying, in the next cycle, could we apply for new residential?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, one
the next
objection
cycle of the ramp up funds,
that's right,
or whatever,
right,
application.
It's an interesting idea because one of the objections that the home builders have made is that there's like a small amount of $4,000 extra that home buyers would have to pay, and so it'd be interesting to explore if that's an objection, possibly a way to get around that, perhaps through a revolving loan fund where mm-hmm. we could finance that up front for new construction mm-hmm. and perhaps get that paid back plus more into a revolving loan fund. So something to explore mm-hmm. to reduce their objection or neutralize that objection.
Mm-hmm. Sammy, has the 1530 figures you were talking about, have those already been approved by the building council? The initial
it's
one
still,
that wasn't...
It's still in play. Yeah, it hasn't been approved yet. But that's... Mm-hmm.
Seems like it will.
What's going to happen? Yeah.
And what you're saying is, once that is adopted, what we want to do is be the kind of the pilot program, if you will, for the higher standards that we wanted to try to get out of
the extra 15% on mm-hmm. top of what is likely to be just the 15%.
Okay. Why don't we marry that with a tax credit? It seems that the way to incentivize something is a tax credit.
You know, I'm certainly not opposed to that. I just wonder about two things. One is that I think the folks from the building council actually are usually very very opposed to the kind of thing that you're talking about in terms of having a different standard in one municipality from what the standards are in other municipalities, which could prove to be a problem, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try it. That doesn't make it unworthy of discussion. I'm just pointing out that's the kind of problem that we'll run into with that idea. But I guess what I wonder is, my perception is that the relatively few new developments that are happening in new construction projects that are happening in Carrboro actually incorporate a lot of green features. Now, how legitimate all of those necessarily are, I don't just assume that they're all legitimate just because people say that. But mm-hmm. but I wonder, it'd be interesting to make some kind of objective comparison between what you're proposing to which I don't even really know exactly what you're proposing, what that mandate would amount to, but to make a comparison between what is actually being built versus what that would require. What I'm trying to get at is, if in reality the houses that are being built already meet or exceed that standard simply because that's what the market is in our local area is demanding, then there's not necessarily a lot of point in going to the trouble of legislating that, given that legislating that actually is potentially a lot of trouble. Do you see what I'm getting at?
I guess that's true, but for lack of really understanding whether that's the case or not, I would suggest how much trouble is it really? Is the bar raise it and they'll be said,
the only thing that would be trouble is trying to get it actually passed in the legislature. I mean, in other words, when we put things like this on our legislative agenda, we're asking, we're asking our legislators to actually, spend their time going to committee meetings and working on drafting bills and so
right,
forth. So,
right.
I we don't want to do that as sort of an academic exercise. Not that I'm saying that's what you're doing.
Right.
We could certainly let me ask this: how would you feel about if we went ahead and said that, well, this is going to be a part of our, we go ahead and make it a part of our agenda, but then we also
at the same time, try to have, ask staff whether there's any way that they could actually look at that issue and try to make some of those comparisons. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I think we'd be using resources here. I mean, the question there is, like, if the question is about using excess resources, asking staff to look into that, maybe another use of resources that we might not have to take or expend. I mean, I don't know how much time or how hard that would be to assess.
I don't really know either, I don't want it to turn into some humongous project for the staff.
I think we need to flesh it out a little bit first before we move forward with it.
I guess the issue is that we have a limited time frame in which to make this proposal.
I'm not trying to say let's don't make the proposal. I'm saying, well, let's go ahead and make the proposal, but then also before we get our legislators spend too much time, want to also look at sort of the practical significance of it.
But maybe we shouldn't tell them that, but rather look into it. And
we don't have to emphasize that angle in talking to them.
And then if that's the case, we can call them up and be like, cool it on all the energy you're putting behind this, if that's the case.
That's the kind of thing I'm trying to suggest. And I think if I can kind of piggyback on that, you know, the other thing, I don't have a specific idea on sort of energy issues or global warming type issues, and I don't necessarily have a lot of optimism that this legislature is going to be that interested in those types of issues. But I would like to ask our legislators what they think is possible, you know, what they think, given the environment that they're trying to work in, what could be done. At the state legislative level.
Seems like this would be, if any, a low-hanging fruit, in as much as a lot of the work's already going to be there and it's going to be on the books, and it's just a matter of them saying, look, this may pass in 5 years, and maybe even the home builders might have an opportunity to nitpick and say, look, the Carbo's experience, it failed. If they're really that faithful in what they believe, which maybe they're not. It's just a matter of just being against regulations in general. It's where they're coming at it from. So,
well,
my suggestion, if you want it to have a little more heft to it, is you figure out how it is a job-creating legislation.
That's right.
If you can couch it in it creates jobs, then you're in a better position than you were if you couch it in it that it will protect the environment.
But I don't think we're going to really get them to think seriously about the idea until the building code is adopted, until the new revisions are adopted, because we're asking them then to let us do something above and beyond what's ultimately adopted. So I think we're kind of stuck with the timing of when the revisions to the building code happen.
Right. I mean, the best we could ask is if the time comes and this building code's been passed at what we're expecting it to be, and you still have an opportunity to pass a special bill, then please do it for Carbro.
Okay. Well, let's put that, unless anybody has an objection, let's put that on the agenda and for discussion with them, and then also the subject of sort of, is there anything else that they see from where they're sitting as being opportunities?
And to piggyback and add on to what Joel was saying, which I fully agree, it is a job-creating opportunity, but also it's a cost-saving opportunity for people who buy these homes. And as much as these are improvements that get rolled into a long-term mortgage, that they'll be receiving the benefits of cheaper utilities month by month. So that initial upfront cost gets paid off within a year or two, and then they receive the benefits over 30 years. So for people who are buying homes, this is a huge benefit.
That suggestion is couched in job creation.
Right.
I'm just saying that nobody's going to listen to that a length of an analysis. And not necessarily because they
don't. I just said you'll be saving money every month is basically what happened.
Yeah, but then the utilities they support are not making it.
Yeah.
That's why couching job creation is more important.
That's at least as true for the Democrats as the Republicans. But anyway.
And they get big bonuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's one thing I was hoping. I'll I can share my other one after your other ideas, too. Or shall I go ahead?
No.
I was wondering if we're going to adopt all or any parts of the Triangle J recommendations, because there are a couple of interest that we...
Let's read them for a minute.
Is that all it takes?
Well, you know, I know 4 through 8, possibly 9 and 10 were of interest to me, and the others I didn't know where folks stood on, but I know 4 through 8 and 10 I was solidly behind.
9 and 10?
Well, 9 I didn't know how folks were feeling, and 1 through 3. But the others I can support easily.
I think 9, the way it's worded there is...
Yeah, isn't it? It's kind of funny. But, I mean, we could reword it.
I think, well, I think it's probably okay there in that they steered away from the discussion of economic development.
Yeah.
Some of the more controversial potential uses for that, so...
Right.
Randy, why did you say 10?
I think 10, I didn't really have a feel for one way or the other.
Okay. What they're trying to say in number 10 is keep having ABC stores,
right,
and not privatize liquor,
right,
sales.
Right.
I guess, yeah, I don't have that strong of a feeling about that either.
Yeah,
I do.
It could have an impact on revenues, a negative impact on revenues for the town if it were privatized.
Well, I just don't think. I mean, how many times, I was a public defender for 6.5 years, and more people, and not a lot, but, you know, I think you'd have less opportunity for people to rob a liquor store if it's still in state control. I'll put it to you that way. The one person I represented in 6.5 years was intoxicated, and he broke into the local ABC store in Chicago.
Yeah, and I certainly, I mean...
I mean, it sounds crazy, but...
My dad owned a liquor store and was robbed at gunpoint, so I...
That said... I do think Triangle J could have picked some better wording. Maintaining the current system, let's just say that it's clear that there are problems with the current system.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying that there is at least one level at which I don't think,
right,
it's a good idea to maintain the current system.
Yeah.
Certainly not in New Hanover County.
Well, we don't have to include that one, but...
Randy, is there a reason you didn't include numbers 2 and 3?
Number what?
2 and 3.
No, I just thought that was something we might want to discuss.
2 and 3?
You know, 2 and 3 ought to be, I mean, at one level, 2 and 3 are preserve current local government revenue sources and options and oppose transfer of state responsibilities to local governments. Those really ought to be, you know, at the top of the discussion,
mm-hmm,
with our state legislators.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly on number 2, they may not really want to hear it.
Right. That's.
But that really, honestly, needs to top our agenda.
Yeah.
Whether there's the extent of a tax increase that we might have to look at next year,
right,
property tax increase we might have to look at next year would be greatly affected by any changes that the state could possibly make to how we share sales tax revenue, for example, among other state shared revenues. And, you know, that would really love for our state legislators to vigorously oppose any changes to how that's done.
Well, why don't we discuss that as a separate item with them?
But I think I'm comfortable with endorsing their entire agenda as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all want to... Can we have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded that we endorse the Triangle J agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
It's not you, Anis. I'm against.
Oh, nay. Okay, sorry.
I disagree on number 10.
And number 6.
Why do you disagree with number 10?
Why do I disagree? Because I just don't know that I agree.
You're telling me you're opposed to the socialized alcohol system that we have? All right.
Well, you know, I guess I've lived in lots of places where, you know, private businesses sold alcohol, and I thought it was fine. It created more business opportunity. It created more drinking opportunity, and I don't really get. You know, I think the whole state-run system is maybe kind of a holdover from an earlier era, in a sense.
It is.
Morally speaking.
I'm on the very opposite.
I mean, I already lost the vote, so I don't, you know, okay. We don't need to.
I would just say that I want more strict control over alcohol and where beer and wine is allowed to be sold, because sometimes what you have is a plethora of places where you can buy beer and wine in minority and impoverished communities, and you can't even buy a fresh apple. So, I certainly, you know, that's my position on that, and I'm going to maintain that position.
So make sure you can only get your various beers and fortified wines in those communities and not have the option of liquor.
Well, I just, that's my position, and I think, you know,
That doesn't seem like selling hard liquor at the convenience store would really make the situation better.
I don't really think that's the root of the problem.
Well, if you're not going to sell medicinal marijuana, why should you be allowed to sell alcohol?
I'll let you ask Joe Hagney.
But I do want to be clear that I support the other 9 items, for the record.
All right. Okay. Anyway, so it passed 6-1 is the upshot of that.
I have two comments.
Sammy has one more.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, after you. I was just waiting for
you. Okay. All right, one question. This was actually a question I had, and I don't know if anyone knows the answer to it. Maybe Arch might know the answer to this. The ability for credit unions to be municipal depositories, is that a federal issue, or is that a state statute that prohibits that, if you know, and you might not know? Okay. I don't know. No one here. I mean, if that's some kind of a state regulation that is not allowing credit unions, I think that'd be something for us to look into and talk to our legislators about.
Okay. That's great.
Okay. And then secondly, I don't, just looking at the League of Municipalities goals, mm-hmm. I think that they have eliminated, at least on these goals, I don't see the collective bargaining. That used to be the one that jumped out at us that we would make sure, but I don't see that one on here, and I don't see any others that are absolutely terrible to me, but I don't know if you want to look at them the same. Usually we adopt it with a few we don't like.
They did come up with it a different way this time around.
Yeah, it seems a little more, there's some specificity, but the ones that are specific kind of make sense. And I don't see some of the ones on before that we did not like.
What about number 25? I put a note to myself.
Seek legislation to classify reclaimed water.
I don't have a problem with that part, but not
instead of the injection of treated water into aquifers.
See, I have a problem with the second part, not the first.
Yeah,
part.
I don't like that second part at all.
Well, if we need to clarify that, let's you know, make a note about that one.
All right.
But some of those others on there, I think, are new and they look kind of interesting.
You know, what does 14 mean?
Seek legislation to require that counties conduct a public hearing before approving a resolution choosing the method of sales tax distribution. Hmm. You know, the county can decide to do it either by population or by, I guess, taxing strength.
Taxing area. Right. And they have the authority right now to make that decision every April and make it effective July 1. So
this aims to make this a public decision, a more public decision.
Well, yeah, they're saying
a public conversation, but also more notice if there were, for example,
right. 14.
We talked last year, if the distribution formula were to change in Orange County, it would cost us about $1 million.
Right.
Which is pretty significant.
Okay. Yeah, which is like 8 cents on our tax rate.
It's our funding of the fare free transit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Phase
19.
Okay. Well, that's definitely, I definitely strongly agree with number 14. Right. I'm not optimistic that it'll happen, but
it's a keeper.
It's a keeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is much better than what they usually come up with.
Prepared meals and beverages.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this
that's
a chance.
Put it on for 2013.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Keep up alive. That's what I'm Valley experience. I like number 15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have some authority, some as yet unexercised authority, I think, maybe the Orange County government does, to increase motor vehicle registration fees.
We're at our maximum.
But I think Orange County government is allowed to do it to benefit public transportation.
Yes, with that. When they got the authority for the referendum for the course in sales tax, or half in sales tax, and they got the authority to increase
do that as well
fee.
Mm-hmm.
There's some planning going on right now about both of those issues. I've been meeting with the mayors of the other municipalities and the Board of County Commissioners chair about the development of a sort of plan or strategy that we plan to report back to y'all about soon regarding the when and how we might vote on a half-cent sales tax and how that money would be proposed to be used for public transportation.
Hmm. All right, so related to the larger regional
plan?
Yes, right. In other words, what that picture would look like for Orange County in particular. A good chunk of the money would be for fixed guideway regional public transportation system. But then the question is, what would the rest of the money, you know, have? What sorts of bus lines would the rest of the money help mm-hmm. support and that kind of thing?
Cool.
So is rail included in that, Mark?
Yeah.
That's one of the options, but yeah, presumably.
For the fixed guideway.
I mean, they're also looking at bus rapid transit and a couple other things, but I think the primary thought is light rail, yeah.
So if no one has any other questions about this other than, I guess, number 25,
right.
So this, as we usually do, we could jump.
Well, I was going to say we could move adoption and just strike out everything after number
the second half of
the second half,
right?
Okay.
The period after water and strike everything right. else out.
Okay. Well, I'll make that motion.
I'm comfortable. Okay. I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Motor passing unanimously.
Okay, Sam.
All right, Timmy, you have one more.
Yeah. So, you know, a challenge is to find ways in which to incentivize the people growing food in town more. And one possible way in which to make that more attractive is to consider use value taxation in the same way that they do it in the county for 10 acre or more properties, to consider an equivalent for within town.
Are you saying same size, like 10 acres, or are you saying a smaller size?
Not having that cap, not having that.
Are you proposing a statewide legislation or a local bill?
A local bill.
And how fleshed out do you have that idea of how that would work?
Well, how would you, let me just, I'm just thinking bureaucracy. How would you figure out, how would you figure out, because you would need, I'm big on documentation, given what I do. How would you know that, for example, I am growing, because I intend to have a garden this year, like 12 tomato plants? I mean, how would you know that I'm actually doing it? Where's the check?
Right. One way to think
like
of it
insurance.
Is there are projects called land banks where uh-huh. there are entities kind of like land trust or housing trust that can look after properties and assure that they're being used for those purposes, for example. And so we would have the ability by the state allowing us to do this, and the details of how we would make that feasible be up to us. I mean, that's a question I have, is like, to what degree does the state need to know that we've got this fleshed out or not?
Well, they do. There is some kind of system for doing it for. I mean, there is some structure out there for doing that for the 10 plus acre properties
right.
that do it now.
But see, presumably they're not. You know, they're not that many. I'm guessing 10 acre properties in the county. That's not doing it, and if it's more than 10 acres, they're actually farming. I mean,
right.
it's not just gardening, because they're
right.
doing farming.
Right.
So I think you need to have some details on how you would check somebody. And I'll use myself as an example. How would you check to know I'm actually growing anything?
Right.
There's also the issue of the fact that the county administers our property taxes and the assessments and
Yeah, we'd have to work something
we
out with them about that.
You couldn't do it if I could just interject. You can't have a local bill that's going to establish a different classification of property locally, and it's got to be statewide.
Okay.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
I mean, that's a constitutional.
Yeah. No.
We can amend the Constitution.
Yeah, no problem.
People do it everything.
Home rule. Yeah.
That's right. Well, I think home rule is always worth it.
Well,
I would be worried about the loss in tax revenue. And I would be worried that somebody who had the leisure time to garden would be paying less property taxes than somebody who didn't have the leisure time to garden. And
and people with big properties.
It's not devil's advocate. I don't know. It would be God's advocate.
They bring in sharecroppers.
Philosophically, I agree with where you're coming from on this, Sammy. I wonder, under the use value program, as it currently exists, whether you have to be, whether the agricultural operation basically has to be commercial. In other words, or you have to be growing crops for sale, basically, in order to qualify or not. I don't know.
You do.
Yeah, I reckon you probably would.
I don't remember. It seems like there's a $1,000 threshold. I don't know what the threshold is, but I know that there is some statutory.
I would think
there
would be relatively few people who would qualify, who were growing on less than 10 acres, were doing it as a commercial enterprise.
Lawfully.
Yeah, but the price is going to drop when it's legalized. That's
anyway. Again, we'll save that for a 2013 session. But I think your idea, if the idea was basically to say, couldn't we just do away with the 10-acre minimum requirement statewide? I think that's a really simple bill. I don't know that it would be non-controversial
right.
or anything, but it's a simple bill, and I think it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to
at least raise the subject or ask our state legislators what they think about the feasibility.
That'd be great, yeah.
Sometime in the future. Because that would be a really, you know, that doesn't require a whole lot of complex research.
Right. It's making use of an already existing thing that's on the books and doing a small tweak to it. But
and it does seem to me that, you know, so like you're what you're imagining that people might do this, you know, within Carrboro town limits is might seem pretty unlikely to some people. But on the other hand, I'll point out there are probably a lot of people who have, you know, who'd be interested in and who in fact are probably even doing commercial agricultural operations that are on less than 10 acres in places all over Carolina.
So, and even in this town, myself included.
No, I realize, but I'm just saying it's, in a way, it's almost more relevant to propose it as a statewide bill. So.
Right, absolutely. And I think it should be thought of not as a leisure thing, but rather as in the same way that we encourage economic it's development opportunities, and sometimes ways that is done is that we facilitate water or electricity to places where there isn't, like we're doing with the Eno Economic Development Zone or the other economic development zones. That's tax money that it is not tax money that's paid, but it's certainly tax money that's being paid to provide the services for that economic development incentive. So it could be thought of.
Let's put it out there, and I don't. Sometimes, occasionally in the past, we've managed to ask certain kinds of questions that have made some of our state legislators angry, almost. And I don't know whether this might possibly be one of those. So, let me suggest that we put it to them in the following way. Not that we're necessarily requesting them to work on this, but we want to ask them about what they think about the feasibility of such a bill.
We're seeking feedback from the idea, yeah. Not necessarily.
I'm so surprised at how quick we are to many times regulate what we ask from other entities. I mean, I would be full force exploring, well, you know, and maybe they'll be mad this time, but they certainly won't be mad next time because they'll expect it and it'll be that much more normal to them.
Well, and Sammy, things do change.
That's exactly my point.
It wasn't that long ago. Sammy, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, we talked about smoking bans.
Right.
You know, and they, I remember Representative Hackney saying, you live in North Carolina, Randy, and I was like, well, right. You know. Things can change, and they have.
And one of our roles is to do that.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. I'm just...
Not that this year we're going to be real successful. I've made them mad a couple times.
I'm just saying, let's just ask them what they think about that and whether they see that as something that's feasible either now or sometime in the future and kind of just make kind of a gentle approach to the issue.
Because the other thing is, doesn't the right always want to have, like, full control over everything?
It's conceivable to me that this proposal could be very well received in a Republican legislature, actually. So, it's possible.
Especially a libertarian.
I have one more comment if no one else does. Does anyone else have anything else?
Mm-mm.
I just want to say that, you know, 2 years ago, we tried to amend our charter to extend anti-discrimination to certain categories of persons, three or four different categories that we were kind of playing catch up on some, such as, handicapped folks and some other categories. We also tried to include sexual orientation and identity, and that part got stricken almost immediately when Mark and I went over to hear the committee talk about it. It was really pretty sad. Mm-hmm. But, and I know that certainly will, it's hard to even imagine that would get past this session. I mean, I think.
Or even a hearing.
Yeah, even a hearing. I mean, there are persons who are just really upset about even anticipating what might come up in the General Assembly this year, constitutional amendment and so on. I mean, there's a lot of other, there are a lot of big things, I think, big social issues that might come up. So I just kind of want to put it out there. I don't know if it hurts or helps for us to try it again. I don't know if we should wait 2 years.
No, we have an obligation to not shut up.
Yeah, it's more important than ever, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, it's not, it doesn't require any research. It's already written.
Right.
And we can talk to our legislators about it. I will say that Verla Insko and Ellie both took it to their respective committees and argued the heck out of it, especially Verla. I mean, she did a great job.
She did.
And it was just astounding to see the committee. I think the final vote was like 13-2 or something in favor of not even getting it out of committee. But the chair of the committee, or the vice chair.
But one of the two votes came from a legislator from rural eastern North Carolina.
True. Yeah, it sure did. And one of the, I think the vice chair of the committee was Paul Stamm. And so.
And he will now be the chair.
Right. Mm. So.
Doesn't
anyway,
matter.
Yeah, but we can't back down.
You don't shut up.
Yeah, we can't back down.
Don't shut up.
We just wanted to throw that out
they
there.
They want us to roll over and die. Forget it.
All right, so we're gonna repropose the town charter amendment regarding gender identity and sexual orientation in housing discrimination. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right in the town charter, and it's exactly the same as last time, minus the few extra that are
but
now
they already did.
Yeah.
Those. Okay.
Have been
right. Okay. All right. Anything else?
Just. Because I don't want it to be brought up out of the blue there, but if we're going to be exploring ways in which to replenish the revolving loan fund, I would like for us to also perhaps consider the retrofit ramp up, like opportunities for making that more robust too.
I think that fits right in with what I was suggesting in terms of sort of asking them for some to tell us where they think the opportunities might be, but we can point that out as well. All right.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Move to second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
No. The other thing I was hoping we could address is the OWASA situation. I feel like it's a very significant matter that I know the town of Chapel Hill will be having a public hearing on it, and I would hope that we would be able to provide our.
This is the water and sewer boundary agreement issue.
The change of
forestry management.
The agreement. No, drawing water out of Jordan Lake.
It's the water and sewer boundary agreement.
Right.
Is that supposed to be on our agenda at some point?
We're waiting. I mean, our staffs are working with the other jurisdictions on that to bring that before the board, but it's just not ready to bring forward.
If we were to want to have it be a public hearing, would we have enough time to do that after staff comes back to us with?
It's not an agreement until this board approves
okay,
it.
Okay, great.
And I think it's appropriate for us to take our time.
Thank you.
And just curious, is there a reason why that particular issue you think warrants a public hearing? I mean, that we're not able to represent voters as we do on other items on that?
I think that having a public hearing opens the opportunity up for a larger discourse within the community on this issue, unlike when we have discussions as a board. I think we would open it up and invite the community at large to have a say in it. I think
attract some additional attention to it.
Can't hurt.
I certainly
haven't heard from many citizens in this state.
Right, and that's part of the reason for doing it.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion to adjourn, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
I'll back you on this one.